evil face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my rock?
Now the N is for knots, or no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish it didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, January 10, 2012. Israeli Prime Minister says he will make goodwill gestures to resume talks with the Palestinians. Meanwhile, Israeli troops intercept the Freedom Riders in Jericho. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli forces detained dozens of Palestinian peace activists who were involved in the Freedom Ride, a car protest organized to defy the Israeli decision to ban Palestinian vehicles from driving on some routes in the West Bank, claiming that these routes are Jewish-only routes. The protest started Tuesday morning from Hebron to Jericho, raising Palestinian flags and signs reading Freedom and Sovereignty for the Palestinians on the bypass roads. Israeli troops intercepted the Freedom Riders at the entrance of Jericho and prevented them from entering the city and detained the protesters. Local sources said that Israeli troops arrested two men and one girl. The two men were identified as Azmi Shiuchi and Omar Tamimi, while the girl's name remains unknown. Settlers can use a network of roads all built on lands owned by Palestinians in the West Bank. However, Israel prohibits Palestinians from using most of these roads. A few months ago, a number of Palestinian peace activists rode buses used by Israeli settlers only and attempted to enter Jerusalem to protest the ban on Palestinians from using these buses and entering Jerusalem. Palestinians cannot enter Jerusalem without a permit issued by the Israeli military for limited time. In other news, the Israeli Peace Now movement said in a press conference on Tuesday that 1,850 settlement units are currently under construction in a number of West Bank settlements. 35% of these units are being built in satellite settlements, all on the Palestinian side of the planned route of the wall. These units will change the route of the wall to include them on the Israeli side, which will cost the Palestinians more lands. The Peace Now movement said this is an unprecedented construction, adding that there are huge plans for construction of more settlement units in East Jerusalem. Such statements by Peace Now come as the Israeli Prime Minister claimed that he is willing to make some goodwill gestures to the Palestinians if the Palestinians promise not to file more applications to the UN and to resume talks with Israelis in Amman. Palestinian sources said the goodwill gestures may include releasing some Palestinian prisoners and handing over control over more West Bank territories to the Palestinian Authority. A Jordanian initiative arranged two meetings for Palestinian and Israeli officials in Amman, and a third meeting is expected to be held on Saturday to prepare for a meeting that will join the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. That's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, January 10th Daily Roundup News from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope you will join us again tomorrow. This was brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, George Bushmal.
Afghanistan, Sunday. An Afghan soldier turned his gun on American soldiers while they were playing volleyball at a camp in southern Afghanistan, killing one and wounding three others before being fatally shot, the Afghan police reported yesterday. It was the third time in just over 2 weeks that a man wearing an Afghan army uniform attacked NATO soldiers. The Afghan soldier approached the volleyball game and appeared to watch the soldiers play before opening fire with an M16 assault rifle, said Ghulam Gilani Fari, deputy police chief of Zabul province. Another U.S. soldier who heard the shot fired and killed the attacker. This has been going on since the Afghans were fighting the Soviet Union. Afghanistan reported Sunday. There is a new report that detainees at Bagram Air Base, the Guantanamo of Afghanistan, are being tortured and abused. The head of the commission investigating the abuse allegations, Gul Rahman Qazi, said prisoners have complained of abuse including beatings, humiliating body searches, and being exposed to extreme cold. Speaking of Guantanamo itself, it will have been open 10 years tomorrow. Pakistan, today, a remote-controlled bomb killed 35 people and wounded more than 60 others in the deadliest attack in months in the Taliban-controlled tribal area of northwest Pakistan. The explosion on Tuesday took place in a market in Jamrud, one of the towns of the Khyber tribal region, which also used to serve as the main supply route for NATO forces operating out of Afghanistan. Baghdad, Iraq, yesterday. At least 15 people were killed and dozens more injured in two separate car bomb attacks in Baghdad. The attacks targeted police officers as well as Shiite pilgrims making their way to the holy city of Karbala for religious commemorations. According to Iraqi security forces, seven people were killed after an explosive-laden car detonated near a police vehicle in the northeast neighborhood of Al-Shab. 19 others were also injured in a blast. Iraq, today, three schoolboys were among at least 10 people killed in Iraq on Tuesday, extending a wave of bloody attacks that have rocked the country since U.S. troops departed. Several of the Tuesday attacks struck predominantly Shiite areas north of Baghdad, though an evening blast in the capital appeared to target Shiite pilgrims commemorating a holy period known as Arbain. This looks like Iraqi Shiites, disgusted and outraged by a storm of deadly sectarian bombings against them, have decided to strike back in kind. New Hampshire, United States, 7th of January. Presidential candidate Rick Perry said at a GOP debate that he would send U.S. troops back to Iraq. Without a status of forces agreement in place or any invitation, this would constitute a second invasion of the country by the United States. Mr. Barack Obama, what the U.S. left behind in Iraq is no role model for Afghanistan or Pakistan. There is exactly nothing U.S. troops can do to control either country. Get U.S. troops out of Afghanistan and make sure not to leave any opening for a possible GOP president in 2013 to reinvade either country.
Palestinians under Israeli occupation experience many restrictions on their day-to-day lives, from lack of water and electricity to restrictions on movement to violence at the hands of Israeli settlers and the Israeli army. Outside Bethlehem, the Nasser family is struggling to hold on to its 100 hilltop acres, which the Israeli government is trying to seize to build more settlements, adding to those that already surround the Nasser farm. The family is working towards self-sufficiency on their farm they call Tent of Nations, as life grows ever more difficult for them and residents of the nearby village of Nahalin. Jihan Nasser lives on the hilltop with her family. She's trained in computer technology and 5 years ago set up a women's learning center in Nahalin. There, she and international volunteers offer computer training, English language courses, health education, and farming techniques to dozens of mostly young village women. On a recent trip to Israel, East Jerusalem, and the West Bank, Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhu spoke with Jihan Nasser about her work in the village, the challenges she's had to overcome, and the difficulties the women she trains still face.
We have volunteers who come here and teaches some of these classes. For example, I also teach computer classes. We have a computer lab. And for example, English classes, we have people coming from America, from UK, from Switzerland, from Germany. They come here, women, and they give those English classes. We have also art workshops. We do. We have so many interested women from all over the world who comes here. We have from Japan, we have from Sweden, we have from Switzerland again, Germany, USA. They come here, and from Italy, they come here and they also do, for example, art workshops with the women to produce like pieces of art, and maybe we can sell it somewhere to the people who comes and visit here, and sometimes in Bethlehem in the shops. We have also a group for embroidery. We do embroidery also with the women. The aim of this is to make those women independent, to be able to survive in those conditions in the village, bad conditions. Some of their fathers and brothers, they don't work, so there is no income coming to the house. So it's not easy for those girls to ask the mothers or the fathers for their needs. For example, one story that some of them, they can't, for example, afford to have pads for their periods. So, for example, you know, doing those workshops in art and embroidery, maybe it's good to sell those things, and for, you know, the income will come directly to them to support them and to be able to buy anything they want, you know, without asking the father or the brother.
The women here are all Muslim, right, in the class?
All of them are Muslims.
And that you're a Christian family.
Right.
But you're all Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any kind of tension or difficulty?
At the beginning, when I started 5 years ago, coming to a very conservative village was not easy. You know, I'm not wearing a veil like all of them, and I'm not Muslim. At the beginning, I had some difficulties. I don't want to say difficulties, but they asked me so many questions about me, my faith, about being a Palestinian Christian, and how I pray, and how many times, and all these things. And I always said to them, look, I am Palestinian, I speak Arabic, and I live in Palestine. So I am like you guys, but my religion is different. So it's good also to give them an idea about my religion. It's always good to introduce them to our religion from that perspective in classes, not directly, you know.
So if they're here, I guess that means they don't have a problem with their fathers or husbands having them come here.
You know, at the beginning, we did have a problem. You know, usually the men used to ask. They used to call me and tell me, what are you doing in the village? What are these courses? Why you are doing these courses here, not in another village, you know? And what they are learning in the classes. And if they are convinced, they will register the wife or the sister. And if not, they will say, it's okay, you know. But it's good that they used to call me, the men, and tell me, please register my woman in this class or that class. But I also want to hear it from the women themselves, to be able to call or come to the center and tell me, I want to be in this class or that class. And I think it's now it's changing since 5 years, and I've been having so many people, I mean, so many women coming by themselves with their kids, coming here, and now I am famous in the village. They know, where are you going? I'm going to Jihan. They don't say, we are going to the women's center. They say, we are going to Jihan. So even the fathers and the brothers, they know Jihan. We focus every year on a different group of women. And since 2 years, since last year and this year, I decided to help those, let me call them desperate girls who dropped out from school at very young age and they don't know what to do and where to go. And they are so desperate. We have every day, we have in the morning, we have a session for 1 hour. We talk about our problems. And it's really sad to hear those stories for those, you know, those problems for those young girls. I mean, sometimes, you know, I feel so upset and I go home and it's too upsetting, you know, and sometimes you don't know what to do, how to help. But I, as I said before, it's good to listen to them and to hear those problems. And sometimes it's good to give them, you know, encouragement and to lift their spirits up, you know, and to be patient and all of that. And I tell them always, just get out of the house, come here, meet us, and sometimes socialize and get to know other friends, get to know other women, hear another problem from another woman, and be, you know, together and, you know, back each other.
That was Jihan Nasir, who runs a women's center in the West Bank village of Nahalin. For more information on the women's center, visit our website at btlonline.org.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. On the 9th of January, Nigerian activists in the United States protested in front of the World Bank's headquarters in solidarity with Occupy Nigeria, the Nigerian We the People Coalition, and Nigeria's labor unions, who have called a general strike in response to fuel price hikes demanded by the IMF and World Bank and imposed on the 1st of January.
In Lagos, the police officers that shot the Nigerians in Lagos have been arrested. Very important that you show up, let your voices be heard. We are not going to back down, okay?
Getting results, don't tell me protest doesn't work.
I was on the phone this morning with leaders from the Nigerian Labor Congress, NLC, and they wanted to convey a message to you at this rally. I have that message here, and I will read it to you to listen to, please. Comrades, on behalf of the Nigerian labor movement, I wish to thank you for standing in solidarity with us as we begin our nationwide strike protesting our government's decision to remove fuel subsidies, resulting in the more than doubling for fuel costs overnight. This action was taken without adequate consultation and without regard for the well-being of the Nigerian people and will adversely affect the working class in our country. It is precisely because the policy prescriptions of the World Bank and the IMF are swallowed whole by our government without regard for the socio-economic impacts on our people that we find ourselves in this situation today. Let me assure you that the Nigerian labor movement will not back down in this struggle.
Never, never, never!
This assault against the working class in our country to continue unopposed. In the days ahead, we are very concerned about the conduct of the security forces in Nigeria as it relates to our people protesting this decision by government. We appreciate that you have brought your voice to the World Bank and IMF so that they know we are not alone in this struggle. We thank you for your solidarity and support. An injury to one is an injury to all.
An injury to one is an injury to all.
We're raised in America, but we're Nigerian blood. We continue to see our family members struggle. While we see new billionaires popping up in Nigeria, this is not right. We all, whoever in there can handle this, that's what needs to happen. Or whoever in there needs to let Nigeria go, take them off their list. Let us be self-sufficient and take care of our own people. That's what needs to happen. That's what we're here for.
Oh, yeah. Policies with this bank and the funds over there, the International Monetary Fund, have been promoting since 1980. Those policies have failed. They failed in Nigeria. They failed in the United States. They failed in Greece. They failed all over the world. But still they are forcing Nigeria to end its subsidies. Still they are forcing liberalization, privatization, budget cuts. Still they say you must shrink yourself. You must grow less so you can grow more. It is a kind of paradoxical thinking.
We lost the middle class, and from there everything went up.
Right.
Now we continue to impose models from outside on the country.
To make one small correction to what a dear friend of mine said, my dear friend Samir, who had spoken earlier with his adorable little girl, says that the policies of the IMF and World Bank are failures. I want to say, the policies of the IMF and World Bank are very successful at their intended goal. The intended goal of the IMF, of the World Bank, of the US Treasury Department, of the US Congress has always been to transfer wealth from the rest of us, from all of us, to the global 1%. And they have been very successful at that. And the corrupt governments we have today in places like Nigeria, in my native India, in South Africa, in Mexico, have all the same goal, which is to transfer money from the rest of us to the 1%. And we will fight.
We are unstoppable. Another world is possible. We are unstoppable.
As of the 10th of January, the general strike in Nigeria is still going on, and there's something you too can do to help if you care about people in Nigeria, if you agree that local people in an oil-producing country should get the oil before Shell does. Boycott Shell. Never buy another drop of gasoline at a Shell station until Nigeria is free from foreign multinational control and from the IMF and World Bank. On the 9th of January, Occupy DC stormed the lobby of PricewaterhouseCoopers, a K Street lobbying firm they are calling out for supporting Mitt Romney. They held the lobby through two warnings from the police, knowing DC police are required to read out three warnings before any mass arrest. One of the participants had this to say about pro-war politicians supported by K Street lobbyists as police counter-invaded the massive cathedral-like lobby of PricewaterhouseCoopers' twin-towered building at 13th and K.
They themselves are fucking terrorists. They want us to believe that because Islam is as radical as it is, and their own lands, that we have a right to go over and take them and their natural resources because we want profits from it. And it's people like this who lobby for oily drilling and for big corporate tax cuts so that we can send our fucking military over there. And these people right here, they don't have enough money because the public sector taxes, there's not enough to pay for these individuals to have paychecks and pensions and insurance and the such so they can have raises, so they can continue this.
Shortly after that statement was read, Occupy DC left the building on the second warning, denying the police the ability to arrest anybody as Occupy DC safely returned to base camp at McPherson Square. Today, members of Occupy DC traveled to Baltimore to assist Occupy Baltimore activists in a successful direct action defense of the home of Leela Kara from foreclosure eviction, which legally had to happen before noon today. She is a victim of predatory lending by Deutsche Bank, which held her mortgage until they foreclosed. With a massive crowd gathered, sheriff deputies did not show up to attempt an eviction prior to the noon deadline, meaning they cannot legally evict today at all. Here are some of the Twitter updates from Occupy Baltimore's timeline. Stop today's eviction. Round one goes to us. It is the owner's birthday. Glad to be part of her present. It's noon. Sheriff can't legally evict today. It's noon. We won. Amazing, energetic crowd. Phone line for the sheriff is busy. Flooded with calls to stop the eviction. Keep it up. Call 410-396-1155. The Foreclosure Defense Force continues to grow. It's a multi-ethnic crowd. Iraq Veterans Against the War and Occupy DC representing at Eviction Defense alongside Lilla and Occupy Baltimore. Cops trying to figure out what to do. 44 minutes left. Don't like it? You can just flush it. Cars are honking outside in support of Occupy Baltimore's effort to stop Deutsche Bank from foreclosing on women. Over 85 people out with Occupy Baltimore to defend home facing foreclosure. 2 days before the successful foreclosure defense, Occupy Baltimore held a rally in front of the house demanding that Deutsche Bank abandon their plans to evict Lila.
What she is going through is what I'm going through. Now, a number of my friends know this, and a number of people I engage in politics with know about this, but this is the first time that I'm saying this in public, right? And I'm doing that for a few reasons, right? Because one of the things we have to do in this moment we have to unpack our own shit. And we have to understand that this thing that we think of as our own shit is not our own shit.
How about that?
There are people that are dealing with this that are all the way at the top and all the way at the bottom. And we are not alone, right? So I stopped paying the mortgage a year ago this month. I just did the math. I have 5 children, and it was just wearing on me. It was wearing on me. It had an effect on how I dealt with my family. And I felt an effect on how I dealt with my wife. It had an effect on how I dealt with the job. And I realized that this was not my fault. And I knew that at some moment in time, I had to take a stand, and we had to take a stand together to say that this shit is not going to happen again. This is our city, and we're gonna fucking take it back.
That's right.
I apologize.
That's right. As Occupy Baltimore and Occupy DC just proved, sheriff's deputies can be deterred and evictions can be resisted. Get together with your neighbors, organize to defend your neighborhood from the banks and their hired thugs in the court system. Library closing alert. Library closing alert. East Bank is back with their plans to demolish the West End Library, and although they promised to rebuild it, they were also promising affordable housing as part of their proposed planned unit development, and now they're trying to get out of it. On the 5th of January, the D.C. Zoning Commission held a public hearing about East Bank's proposed planned unit development that would, among other things, tear down the West End Library and the nearby firehouse. Maybe they would be replaced, but maybe not, too, depending on what kind of muscle East Bank can apply to the D.C. government. This is the same redevelopment plan that outraged West End residents and library supporters stopped in summer 2007. That time around, public hearings were held on such dates as July 5th in an effort to evade public scrutiny, but East Bank's behavior backfired and the council's approval was rescinded that fall. Now East Bank is back with essentially the same proposal, possibly with the affordable housing sweetener for the deal stripped out or scaled back. In 2010, the city council quietly passed similar legislation to allow the project, but East Bank wants even more, based on their hopes to remove the affordable housing offered in return for the library and the firehouse. They want to build condominiums, luxury condominiums, in the place of everything that currently stands there. I was unable to enter the hearing due to intrusive and detailed bag searches at 441 4th Street, where the Zoning Commission meets. Here is an interview with another D.C. resident who managed to get in, but had to leave before he could testify because supporters of East Bank droned on and on for an hour and a half. He would have had to stay several additional hours in order to be heard.
Well, the portion of the hearing that I attended, they heard from
parties, meaning legal parties to the case, testified some in favor of the proposed development and some against the proposed zoning variance that East Bank is seeking.
What kind of variance are they seeking?
They're seeking to be able to build higher and closer to the property lines in exchange for building the library and the firehouse, even though the, of course, as it stands now, the land that the library and the firehouse sit on belong to the public, so seeking a variance for that doesn't really make sense.
So they want a variance in return for using public land?
Essentially, yes.
And did they in fact try to get out of the conditions requiring them to build a certain percentage of affordable housing?
East Bank did not present at the meeting while I was there. However, many people, even those testifying in support of the variance for East Bank, stated that East Bank was seeking to decrease the number of affordable housing units that would be built there, and East Bank, which had opportunity to challenge that statement, did not do so. That indicates that indicates that yes, they are in the open seeking to reduce the number of affordable units.
What percentage of people there were for and what percentage were against this development?
Well, the way the hearing was structured, first they heard from the parties in support, then individuals in support, then parties against, and individuals against. And so there were, I would say, 7 to 8 parties in or organizations in support, and maybe 5 or 6 individuals in support. And after that, the parties against was beginning, and they had gone through 3 or 4 of those, and there were more after I was leaving.
So my guess is by having parties against last to make it as difficult as possible for citizen opposition to be heard.
I stayed for about an hour and a half of the meeting, and they had not yet begun individual opposition to the project.
That's typical. And on top of all else, the Zoning Commission meets in a building with bag searches and metal detectors, and some people can't even get in.
Yeah. Another thing is that the emergency legislation that the D.C. Council passed in 2007 was rescinded because of public outcry about disposing of the property in this way. The reasons that they cited for getting rid of this property, among them, were as follows. There exists an immediate need to dispose of these lots that the property sit on in order for the district to create job opportunities and affordable housing units for district residents. So if they're
weren't they going to tear down an apartment?
If they're citing that as justification for why it needs to be disposed of, and then saying, "Well, we want fewer affordable units," that doesn't make any sense. They also said the District of Columbia Public Library will not have capital funds to replace the West End Branch Library until the years 2011.
So better to through, which has
through
come
2013, which is now.
So it's better to have no library?
So there should be money in the budget for this anyway, and the district doesn't need East Bank to pay for it.
And who's that fat slug? Joe Sternley?
The fat guy is Anthony Lanier.
Anthony Lanier.
Who's the head of East Bank, and the vice president of East Bank, who you mentioned, is Joe Sternley, who at the time of this emergency legislation passing was married to the attorney general of the city, Linda Singer. So when there were an opinion was sought as to whether emergency legislation should be allowed for the disposition of public property when no real emergency exists, one of the parties involved was sleeping with the Attorney General.
Interesting. And of course, their first hearing on that was held on the 5th of July, 2007, in an attempt to evade the public, which failed.
That's correct. Yep. And so that legislation was rescinded under public pressure in September of 2007.
So in the absence of that legislation, what is the situation for East Bank if they don't get their variance and don't get any help from the D.C. government?
The D.C. Council, subsequent to that, did pass similar legislation to the first disposition.
Just waiting the public out?
If they don't get the zoning variance, I don't know what they would do, but it seems to me that they actually could afford to not get the zoning variance and build the affordable units, so maybe that would happen, but I don't know what they would do.
It sounds like we need to encourage everybody to say no to this variance.
Well, there certainly were, you know, a number of neighborhood residents who did not support the project. There were some who did, and there were some who didn't. So it certainly was far from consensus.
A lot of people in the West End have not forgotten the last time those fat pigs at East Bank tried to shut down the West End Library. On the 7th of January, local time, 3 activists from Australia Forest Defense boarded the Japanese whaler security ship Shonan Maru No. 2, which had illegally followed the Sea Shepherd ship Steve Irwin back into Australian waters. They boarded the ship just 16 miles off the coast, well within the Australian 24-mile economic exclusion zone the whalers are banned from entering. Here's what it sounded like when Sea Shepherd put three activists from Australian Forest Rescue aboard the Shonan Maru number 2.
Go, 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 go,
as the Steve Irwin headed back out to sea to rejoin the Bob Barker harassing the whalers, the Shonan Maru number 2, with all three activists held prisoner on board, followed them south out of Australian waters. Although it was thought that they might be dragged all the way back to Japan to face trial, Japan and Australia at the last minute agreed to transfer the three activists to the Australian Customs vessel Ocean Protector, from which they would be released and free to rejoin the fight. Meanwhile, the other Sea Shepherd ship, the Bob Barker, is still harassing the whaling fleet. Here's some sound from a video in which one of the small boat teams almost succeeds in falling the Yushin Maru number 3's propellers with a prop falling rope.
Hey,
there are still no reports of the whalers killing any whales this season, with Sea Shepherd having drones out and able to maintain at least one ship on the whalers and drone coverage 24/7. It seems to me that Japan's illegal pirate whaling fleet is going to have a very hard season, and they may return home with a completely empty ship.